For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
If you're interested in Tesla, don't miss Ride the Lightning, the Tesla unofficial podcast hosted every week by me, Ryan McCaffrey, a longtime Tesla owner and super fan. On episode 200, I had Elon Musk on for an hour. On episode 220, I talked to Tesla's chief designer, and I'm also there at every big Tesla event covering it in person. Ride the Lightning recaps and analyzes everything happening with the world's biggest EV automaker each week. Hear about the latest Cybertruck developments, the next-gen Roadster, the Model S Plaid, plus the newest updates to the Model 3, X, Y, and more. New episodes have been dropping every Sunday since 2015, so jump in and enjoy. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast service, or check it out at patreon.com/Tesla Podcast. That's Ride the Lightning, the Tesla unofficial podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. We're going to talk about the Jaguar F-Type that we've been driving, an update on Goldberg's Garage, and a Dodge Demon that's sold on Bring a Trailer, pulling some pretty good money. Those are doing well. Before we get started, here's Geico. Would you love to save money on insurance? Well, of course, who doesn't love a good deal? Well, when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even homeowners, condo, and renters coverage. Save even more with a special discount when you bundle coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24-hour roadside assistance, and the switch to Geico becomes a no-brainer. Switch today and see how you can save. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent. Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, here with Bill Goldberg. Oh, man. It's been busy. Things have been busy. Did you manage to get new tires on the triple nickel delivering donuts?
Oh, yeah. The last time we spoke.
I was asking because, you know, everything's just so delayed and supply chain issues and shipping issues. I was like, I didn't even know if you were able to get them in the, you know, the last week or so.
I love Harry and everyone over at Nitto, but even our sponsors are having a hard time getting product out, as evident by me ordering two sets of tires. I think it was a month ago. Mm-hmm. And usually it takes literally 24 hours to 48 hours. And I still haven't seen any tires. Fortunately, over in the 14 storage bins that I have for God, no, like 10 bins that I have the cars in, I hit a couple sets of tires in there for a rainy day like today.
Or
when the tires, you know, went down to steel. So I'm good. I got the original wheels and tires put on the green, the Demon that I drive, so that now it's not on 18 inch wheels and it's not ridiculous looking and handling. So that's a new toy that I've been taking out lately. So
speaking of, what do you think of that Demon that sold on Bring a Trailer? It's a 2018. They've got a couple years on them now. We knew they were going to be collectible, but this is this one was the never driven. It was, some people, we've had this conversation. Some people drive, some people collect, some people do both. 540 miles, all original SRT Demon.
So how was it never driven?
540 miles is basically nothing, right?
Mine's got five on it. And it's been driven because I drove it.
Because you drove it 4.9 miles. And then
no, I actually drove it 2 because it came with 3 miles on it. But
I guess 540. We can get into that debate at some point about
had this conversation again.
Well, again, the difference between 5 miles and 500 miles. Is it going
to... Yeah, but you came to the realization on your Mustang, right? that it was more of what I was saying than what you were. You thought you were going to put a lot of miles on it. Now that you have it, you're not going to put many miles on that thing.
And you're right, though, but taking that blast down the street, like when it loaded off the truck with like 3,630 miles, I was like, now it's got 3,631 miles because I just drove it down the street. But, you know, that car specifically, I took it over to Galpin Auto Sports. We're getting it cleaned up. And what I found is I'm picking and choosing the miles that I want to put on the car. So that's right. So I flatbedded it to Galpin because that's like 30 miles. And I was like, I don't want to just sit in traffic for 30 miles and not enjoy the 30 miles. Right. No. So I flatbedded it there to get it cleaned up and all the fluids changed and everything. And fix that bumper issue in the back. And we're going to meet the dry ice blasting guy out there on Friday and take a look at the car and talk about where we're going to do it. And the guys at Galpin Auto Sports are interested. And so we're going to have a little meeting on Friday about dry ice blasting. And then I'll probably flatbed at home. But then I'm looking forward to – there's like a Shelby event I think in May that I might drive it to. I talked to Aaron Shelby. I think he's going to come out for that event. And it's a big fundraiser.
Plan it like a road – take it when there's no traffic. Yeah. Good luck. Go 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right. Yeah. But you know, to go to an event on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning and is much easier than sitting in traffic on a noon on a Friday trying to get to the valley from LA. So yeah, I'm just picking and choosing my miles carefully. But anyway, that Demon on Bring a Trailer, it sold for $173,000. I guess, you know, when you add the fee, $181,600. What were those new? Somewhere around the 90 range, so maybe it's doubled in value?
83 to 87, I think it was, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, I mean, hey, doubling in value in a short period of time is a great deal. I mean, it doesn't make me want to get rid of the second one that I have immediately until they go over 200. But,
yeah.
You know, if that's the case at any point in time, but I that's a strong number. I mean, it's certainly better than the 120 we saw at Barrett or whatever it was last year for a couple of.
You know, it's interesting to see. You know, I think the car is doing very well for what it is. You know, it's not. You know, a 4GT has all the buzz around it, but it's a $500,000-$600,000 car when it's new and. You know, and it's doubled in value to a million, 1.1, 1.1 and change. You know, so you don't see a lot of, you know, like a lot of real muscle cars be able to pop that much to go double in value.
Absolutely not.
You know, I think the Shelby GT 350Rs with the flat plane crank, I think those have gone up a little bit in value. You know, we're seeing them, you know, but again, they were limited production like the Demon is, and they had a very special engine. And
so that would be the Mustang in that category that you think would appreciate the most in the shortest period of time.
You know, interesting in that the GT 500, you know, is the bigger car, the more sophisticated, the bigger engine. But they're making that car for several years. The GT 350 and the GT 350R with that specific engine, you know, they didn't make it for very long. It's kind of limited. I think that R model is going to be a collectible car. I think the GT 350 will be collectible. But if you did opt for the R model package, you got that R model. I think that car is going to be definitely worth some money. And a few friends of mine, you know, Mustang super fans, have even reached out and said they're already starting to get like kind of struck by the price. They're like, yeah, it's already out of my reach. I should have got it when I had the chance. And like, you know, that conversation we've all had is should have got it when we had the chance. Yeah, I'm starting to hear that already on the R models going, man, I should have got it, you know, when I had the chance. You know, which is why I bought the SAC, you know, I mean, hell, if I bought that thing new in 92, I would have paid $41,000 for it. Not way more than that, you know, not quite a bit more than that. But you know, it is what it is. And I think it'll go up in value, but you know, I'll enjoy it as well. But yeah, I think the Demon's making a move. I think it's good. Now, this is an example with 540 miles. So, you know, there's a handful of these, like yours, even having less than that. There might be a few others out there that have very, very few miles on them. And
I'm telling you, while we're on the Mopar thing, and obviously I don't want to piss off any of the Demon guys because I'm one of them, but I truly believe that Superstock, I think it was 2019 they offered it, or yeah, 2020. I think that's the car that's going to be worth the money. Because if you look at the one thing that separated the Demon from everything else was the fact that it could lift the front tires off the ground, right?
Yeah.
It's the first vehicle to be able to do that. Well, doesn't the Superstock come in at 807 instead of 808? Horsepower wise, so you can't tell me that one horsepower is going to affect the front end, yeah, except for the fact that I'm sure it's geared differently, right? But the right fact that I think they only sold like 200 of them in the initial year. So you compare that with the 3,300 of the Demons that went out in 2018, you know, and I mean, it's basically the same car, but it's, yeah, a more functional car.
But the suspension's a bit different because when you were digging into your Demon, right, and going to do kind of a road race car out of it, you guys figured out that it's way more of a drag race oriented suspension underneath that car than you originally thought.
Absolutely.
And that's why you didn't do the project.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the Superstock is just a juiced up red eye.
Yeah. It's more of a track version of it.
I think it is. Believe me, I don't know much about that car, so I can't really speak to it, you know, intelligently. But
do you have a Superstock?
I do not.
No.
And you know, I'm thinking about getting one. But like I said, I believe that's the car that's going to appreciate the most in 10 years.
Yeah. And listen, it's a good point. And now that you're kind of talking about it, we're back to that, you know, if you have the opportunity, maybe want to pick one up before you sit there and go, yeah, I should have done that 2 years ago.
Exactly. We're going to be hearkening back on this conversation. You're going to, yeah, replay to me in a year and go, remember this?
Yeah.
You bought that car. So,
well,
yeah.
Listen, maybe in several months from now, you'll have plenty of space to put it. What's going on with the garage?
Won't be several months, kid. Hopefully it'll be a lot sooner, man. The progress, as I showed you on the video that I'm going to be posting a similar version on my YouTube channel and my social media accounts, but it's jamming, dude. I mean, like you said, I see it every day, so I don't see the real progress, but you know, from what I showed you after coming back from Saudi to now, I mean, I think it's made a lot of ground.
Yeah. So, sure. But for you guys listening, before we started the show, we were just looking at just an iPhone video. You went out this morning and did a little walkthrough on the garage and yeah, the pictures from before you went to Saudi Arabia to wrestle to now, things are moving. I mean, it's something to be said for having a plan, you know, and having kind of the, you know, sort of the prefab version of this, right? It's not a full prefab, but
all the advantages of a prefab.
Yeah. And speed is the thing. And we were just admiring cement. It's a weird thing to admire, but knowing the amount of time and money and effort that went into making that goddamn slab. Now we're looking at it, we're like, that's the most beautiful piece of cement I've ever seen. Like, it's just,
well, I showed you me on the machine making some of the pattern in it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I got to post that one, but it was so much fun. I felt like, I'm not going to go as far as saying Da Vinci, but I felt like I was contributing to the artistic value of the floor. As I look at it now, after it's been driven over and everything prior to being cured, or not cured, but being glazed, you know, with the stain and the paint or whatever we're going to do on it.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it looks like shit comparatively, but it's a huge slab of concrete, and it's cool, you know, for us meatheads and motorheads. It's we appreciate stuff like that.
I will offer this little bit of advice,
please.
I it's kind of a cart before the horse thing, but I did the floors in this warehouse that I just moved into, and I wanted to get it done before I moved everything in, but which is good, right? But you do have to be very careful with any type of like forklift or anything that you bring in there. Like you,
So is your advice to wait? Because I'm going to wait.
My advice is, if you're going to bring in forklifts to bring like a gym and weight equipment to the second level and all that,
absolutely,
do that before you do the floors. Now, I'm not saying you can't drive a forklift in there. I'm just saying when you're doing a lot of work, front, back, turn, a lot of movement with the forklift, it's not the driving over the floor. It's the turning of the wheels, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where it really starts to make a difference. And if you're in one spot or one general area, let's say you're at the edge of the second story and you're lifting stuff and you're back and forth and back and forth, it'll start to eat away. It will. Now, when the floors are done and your second level is built and you've moved all the weights up there, if you need to bring the forklift in to move stuff around, that's different, right? It's cured. It's hard. It's got, the floor, the epoxy coating, whatever you're going to do. Definitely consider the flooring options when you get to durability. Driving the car on it was fine and stuff. I just had the guys come in with the Genie, right? The Genie is like the big scissor lift with the giant four wheels on it. And they replaced all the lights with LED lights. It's part mm-hmm. of a, it's actually part of a program that
there's four of them in my garage.
Yeah. Right. So you've got them there on the property. You guys have all seen it, right? The guy rides in the thing and it lifts them up. It's a big scissor lift. And part of a efficiency power program out here is they'll take all of your fluorescent lights and turn them into LEDs, but they'll do it the right way. They'll change the ballast and all that stuff. So they came in and changed out all of the lights, and they had, I think, three of these Genies going through there, and it was okay. Now, when I moved into the place, we did the floors. The floors only got to dry for about a week, and we had a lot of movement on there, and where my roll-up door is, the entrance to the building, that mm-hmm. got the most traffic, the most abuse. And yes, some of my epoxy flooring, given the timing and not enough time to cure, is a little screwed up. And maybe it can be fixed. It's not bad. It's the top coat, the color is a gray, and the primer underneath is a gray. So it looks like a little bit of a paint chip, but it's still gray. So it's okay, but it's really not what you want in your place. And if I owned the building, yeah, I would be unsatisfied with it. But mm-hmm. because that door entrance area was so high traffic, it really needed two or three more weeks of curing, before it would do that. Thinking about the flooring, thinking about, we did the solid gray. I didn't do the fleck that you see in it. And the solid gray definitely gets like wheel marks and dirt. And, so it's a little bit more, it's got more of a industrial factory look and a little less.
You can find a freaking bolt.
It's funny because, I was putting a gym in there, and I bought the equipment, and I've been building all the equipment myself. And yes, I'm dropping bolts, and I can find them. I hear dink, shoom, and first of all, the floor is slick, so when the bolt drops, it does shoot like 30 feet away. But at least I can see it. With that fleck, I would never be able to see it, and I have to just like get the big broom, just like keep brooming the floor until I hear it hit the bolt.
I had to get the magnet broom.
Yeah. Right. That's what I should make. I should make a squeegee with a magnet on the front edge of it, so I could just walk around and just pick up everything.
You don't need it now. You have a solid floor.
Yeah. So the polished concrete with a top coat could be interesting.
That's what I'm doing. You know, the ones that look like they look like they have a marble finish.
Yeah.
That's what
I'm doing. Cool too. I do like that. I think that's what We're going to do an Adams garage in the new garage.
It's badass.
Toward that, yeah.
I mean, it's industrial. It's badass. It's beautiful looking. It's durable.
It's got enough solid color. Enough solid color to find things that you drop, but enough texture in it that, you know, if you leave footprints or something, you don't really notice it as much. And then later you can always clean it, wash it. And so,
yeah, I'll be honest. I didn't think of the bolt thing until now. because I was so enamored with the appearance of it. But yeah, I'll just make sure that the color is such that I can find anything that I drop.
So, you know, the this is a little too late to bring it up now because we were just talking about how great that slab turned out and the walls were starting to go up. But
oh, here we go.
But was it designed in a way to have drains? Can you, on that bottom level with the cars, can you hose it down and squeegee it?
Yeah. 100%. There's a huge drain in the middle of the garage.
Right. So that's kind of like when you go and you rent these industrial warehouses, you know, like, well, you know, and mine's kind of a condo complex. So I've got a, you know, I've got a roll up door. The guy next to me, you know, we share a wall and he shares a wall. The next guy. It's, you know, it's just a row of garages, but they're little warehouses. Mm-hmm. And so the walls in between us, because some people have large warehouses, some people have small, it's just a wall. It's just, you know, it's just drywall and a couple of studs. And, you know, it's not brick in between us or anything like that. So even if I got the hose, washed down my floor and got the squeegee to gut it all out the front door, I don't know how much water is just going to go right under that drywall into the neighbor's place. And he's probably storing like cardboard boxes and t-shirts and things like that.
Know.
And that guy would be pissed. So I got to just do it with like the mop and bucket. Or there's the larger ones. It's like a giant, it looks like a Zamboni, but you don't ride on it. You push it. It's like a small Zamboni. And it has like little mop heads in it, right? Like if you needed a mop, you know, 10,000 square feet, you can use that thing, or you hose it down. So if you built it with the idea of being able to hose it down, that's going to be one of the smartest moves you've made. Cause already I'm walking around my place going,
Oh,
we got to be able to, I wish I could hose this place out, but I can't.
1,000% because I've dealt with that issue every place that I've owned, right?
Yeah.
Every house, garage, every garage that I've built in the past, it's been hard because, you know, mainly because of the material of the walls, right?
That's right.
You know, that's the biggest issue. But I pre-planned this one, and there's not much wall in between anything. There's garage doors around the entire structure.
Yeah.
So I can open everything up and get, you know, 75% of everything out without hitting anything except for complete open space.
And if your drain's in the middle, then you can work your way to the center. You don't have to squeegee all the waters out the doors, right? You can just work your way to the center. And yeah, that's so good to hear. It's going to be so much better to be able to just go in there when you need to.
Wash bay in the back, right?
Yeah.
So if I ever need to detail anything, I'll just pull it out of the main garage and just pull it right into the garage bay or to the wash bay. Don't have to wash it. I could just detail it and do everything in there, not get any fluids or anything out of it. So,
well, if you got to wash your 5-mile demon and you don't want to drive it, you can just scoop it up with the forklift, wash it.
I can move it, you know, from end to end and not acquire a mile on it for 10 years. So I'm good.
Well, that's good. It's good. It's good to see all the progress, things that are happening.
Thank you. You know, you can empathize.
The only thing I know is where's
my staircase? It's floating around in space somewhere. You just can't find it.
Yeah. It's gotta be, gotta wait for it to get delivered, I guess. Right.
There must be a chip in it.
So I've been driving some cars. I just want to get into that. I'm driving the Jaguar F-Type. I've got the convertible. I like the convertible. I think I like the coupe a little bit more. I'm not really a huge convertible guy. But, you know, just a good-looking car. Ian Callum, that was at Jaguar, a Land Rover for a long time on the Jaguar side. He was at Aston Martin, designed the Aston Martin DB9. made the Jaguar F-Type. Very, very pretty car. Just a stunning sports car. A little small on the inside, very much sports car-ish.
A little?
Yeah, you would have a hard time getting
Remember,
into
I
it for
I
sure.
I drove that thing against Anthony Joshua on Top Gear.
That's right.
What was it?
In Top Gear in the UK.
And that was
right-hand drive car?
Right-hand drive, and it was miserable. It was just absolutely miserable. But, it was tiny. What's so funny is that, my entire life I've been a Jaguar guy.
Yeah.
I mean, my brothers, my father has, they've had, I don't know, probably 25, 30 Jags between the three of them. And I've always been enamored with that E-Type,
it's pretty
convertible British Racing green 4-speed V12 car. And I had one, 67, I think it was. But it's amazing that one negative experience in a vehicle can crush your lifelong love of one manufacturer, as did that show of me driving that freaking F-Type.
Well, only because so many people watched it.
No, not because of that. Just because it was miserable. It was a miserable driving experience. It was the first time I've ever been in a Jaguar and had a miserable driving experience. That's all.
Well, don't let it ruin the brand for you, because the brand is still good and we still like the vintage cars. Avoid the F-Type by all means. You should avoid it. I had fun with the car. They did a little bit of a facelift and updated the look of it. It's sleek. It's good. The infotainment system is that new system. It seems to be working well.
What's the interior like? The quality of the interior.
I thought it was good. I mean, it had plenty of nice leather on it, some diamond stitching in the seats. The steering wheel felt good. I like that it has a proper, even though it's automatic, has a proper shifter, a stick. It's not the dial that has to pop up from out of the dash. And the sport exhaust sounds good. And I think Jaguar's starting to realize like who wants this car. They're saying, hey, let's do a sports car. We'll do a coupe, we'll do a convertible, and we'll make it fuel efficient. We'll have a nice little V6 in it. And that lasted for a while, but for 22, maybe for 23, they're like, forget it. No six cylinder, no four cylinder, just V8s. So they have their 5-liter supercharged V8. And the P450 is a 444 horsepower version. And then the R is a 575 horsepower version. Same engine. One's a little detuned. One's a little more fuel efficient. And that's where they're going to go. And now the options are this. You can get the 450 horse or the 575 horse. You can get it in coupe or convertible. Either one. And you can get either one in rear-wheel drive or all-wheel drive.
Wow.
Right? So that's the options lineup. And they're like, now, the 5-liter, the supercharged V8 that Jaguar Land Rover has, a lot of this technology, maybe the block, something, is a carryover from their 4 days. This is an older engine. And they've just updated it and revised it over the years. Not necessarily a bad thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like the engine. I am a fan of this engine. I think it does well. I like the low end torque of this engine. I'm driving the rear wheel drive version, and I realized as soon as I got into this thing again, even the 444 horsepower rear wheel drive, I got into it and I was like, it reminded me of why I like the Jaguar F-Type so much. It's a British muscle car. Every stoplight, if you lean into that gas a little bit, that throttle a little bit, it'll chirp the tires, it'll spin the tires with the traction control on. It's got a little bit of wheel spin built into it, And It just feels like a muscle car. It's got a great exhaust note. It's got that you know. Listen, you're driving Hellcats and Demons and stuff, and yeah, it's like that. It's got a little bit of supercharger whine to it. It's got that real low end torque. It breaks the tires loose, and it's a fun little. It's a British muscle car, you know. You know, I'd say that about some of the AMG cars. They're kind of German muscle cars, and they've got a great note to them. They got good low end power, and you know, they're all turbo and stuff now, but they didn't all used to be. So this is probably kind of the last hurrah you're going to get with this type of car before everything starts to go to EV and hybrid or whatever. And I'd say the same thing about the Jaguar F, the F-Pace SVR that we just drove, the SUV with that engine, right? It's a, I think it's a great muscle truck, little SUV. The Range Rover Sport SVR's got that engine. That's got to be one of the loudest SUVs on the market right now, next to the probably the Urus. That thing just screams when you get on it. From outside the car, it's a beast. It's wailing. If anything, they made these Jags a little more docile. They just made these things a little bit easier to drive. But in its normal mode, so one of the things... like I was driving the Aston Martin Vantage as well. That's got the V8 engine turbo from AMG in it. It's a fantastic car. It's beautiful. It's fast. It sounds good. It looks good. You know, you could see a lot of the design carryover with Aston Martin and Jaguar because Ian Callum, the head designer, was involved with those projects. But the Aston Martin in its normal mode is very, very easy to drive. And in its Sport Plus mode, it really wakes up and becomes fun. The Jaguar F-Type is already kind of angry in its normal mode and then becomes more angry in its dynamic mode, right? When you put it in that. There's not – there's more of a spread in the Aston Martin than in the Jag. So if you want something drivable, right, the Aston Martin is more drivable. The Jag feels more like a crazy sports car. Like it just feels like a muscle car, sports car. And I kind of like not having to get into it every time and put it in dynamic mode to enjoy it. I just got into the car and smashed the gas. It would chirp the tires and take off, right? So, you know, and I just I put the top down, grabbed the dogs. They're looking around and they're listening to the engine and they're having the best time. And it was a fun little cruise around town and that thing. So anyway, I kind of like it. And if you're, you know, we've had this discussion as well. It's like the Demons, the Hellcats, the GT500s out there, the, you know, all the SRT cars, you know, the F-Type, you know, so many of these cars kind of fall into that category of this could be your last chance to get a really good, big power, you know, engine, you know, engine, you know, internal combustion engine car, ICE car, I guess we're calling it now. I'm not sure if I like that term, but but yeah, because, you know, I'm not saying the hybrid cars are going to be worse. They're just going to be different, you know. You know, Ferrari's got this.
None of us want to lose out, right? And so unless we know exactly the drop dead date of these ICE cars extinction, then we're going to hold on to the fact that, oh yeah, this is the last one they're going to build. This is the last one they're going to build. It's going to continue on God knows how long, but none of us are going to take that chance to be the guy that said, oh, I should have bought that car, right?
Right. Right. I mean, look, Ferrari's got their new hybrid that's out or coming out, and it's V6 with hybrid technology. And it's everything you would expect from Ferrari. It's badass. It's, you know, it's fast as hell and it's amazing. But now you're thinking in your head like, yeah, but it's V6 hybrid Ferrari. I'm not saying the performance isn't going to be there in these future cars. Absolutely
that's
will
not,
be.
That's, yeah, that's not the point. It's a different type of performance.
That's right. But to get that Ferrari with the V8 flat plane crank, naturally aspirated Ferrari, or the turbo V8, you know, crank, and you get the naturally aspirated V12, you know, you grab, you know, a super fast or an 812 or F12 going back a couple of years, 575, 550, you know, these V12 engines, and they just sound so fantastic. You know, Adam's got his DB9. It's a V12 DB9. I was just like, it's just a nice sounding car.
Sounds like an orchestra. It's yeah. Beautiful.
And listen, the Vantage V8 that I just drove probably has more horsepower and is a hell of a lot faster than his V12 from 2005 or whatever it is. But I don't know. It's just kind of a special car, and just to have that type of engine. So anyway, the point is
they're all going to be worth more money. Period. End story. It's just which one's going to be worth more,
or right? Certainly a different experience. Look, we're going to end up – we're fans of cars. We like the new stuff. We like the old stuff. We're going to end up in vehicles that are electric or hybrid, and it's going to be like a daily driver. It's going to be a truck or a car or an SUV.
Absolutely.
And it's going to perform, and it's going to be great. But to be able to, you know, have the luxury of opening up the garage door and seeing, you know, something else you can drive when you want to on the weekends, whatever, and just have it fire up and just be the gnarly beast that we love right now. Yes, there's room for both. What I mean is room for both in
no
us.
Question.
You know,
it's like the onset of the computer, right? My dad, you know, was a naysayer in the beginning. Right.
Yeah.
And he got his doctorate at Harvard, dude. This dude never made a B in his life. So right at the beginning, he was a naysayer. But within, I don't know, 6 months, he was learning. He was studying to become a professor of computer technology at University of Tulsa, you know, in his off time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the point is that, you know, we can sit here and talk about exhaust notes all we want. But the reality is it's going in a different direction. And, you know, you as car guys, we always want to be at the forefront of that. So, you know, it's like being old school. The old school guys, there's not many of us around anymore, right? But it doesn't mean, you know, that it's smart to stick with that train of logic, right? You have to wake up and it's a new day.
Yeah.
So you got to adhere to what's new. So.
My dad's on Twitter.
Hopefully
now.
You don't have a tape player that has an exhaust note.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, I don't know. It's good. I enjoyed the car. I like the car. Like I said, I love the Aston Martin as well. That V8 Vantage is good. I believe today, as we're recording this, I don't know if it came out yet, but they were supposed to announce a V12 Vantage, the new V12 Vantage. See if I can find it. Yeah. Here's a new V12 Vantage. Looks good. A little racier, a little sportier. It's got we finally got the combination. You know, the Vantage had the big mouth in the front, and then the one I drove had the optional front nose with the vanes and the slim down. Made it look more like an Aston Martin, which is good. So the V12 looks like that
more
car
like
on steroids. It's got more of an aggressive front lip. It's got a wing in the back. It's got a little bit more character on the side, the front fender vent and how it kind of tapers down and turns into kind of a side skirt. You know, yeah, it's cool. It will have, let's see, the 5.2 liter V12. It's going to be limited production. Yeah, 690 horsepower and 555 pound feet of torque.
Nothing wrong with that.
Eight speed.
It's a great time.
It's got the 8-speed ZF transmission. And 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds, top speed of 200 miles an hour. So, yeah, it's wider overall. It's 1.6 inches wider. It's got a 275 front and a 315 rear tire.
Like that. That's huge.
The front grille is 25% larger than what we saw in the Vantage, but it has that new style with the you know, horizontal vanes on it, which I think, you know, look better on that car. Now it's, you know, I'm seeing some notes about the, you know, the added downforce from the front splitter, the side skirts, the rear diffuser, the wing, 450 pounds of downforce at top speed. I don't know who's going to go 200 miles an hour, but
never know.
Anyway, it's good. But I like what Aston's doing here. Aston is saying, hey, we know we're going to have to do some hybrid stuff. So let's go ahead and get this V12 Vantage out the door. And let's take our DBX SUV and let's make it 707 horsepower. The new DBX 707, which I think I'm going to be able to drive. I've been talking to Aston and love the guys over there. But the current press fleet has just been retired, and they're waiting for the new vehicles to come in. They're waiting just like everybody else. And I think that that SUV is going to be part of the group. So looking forward to that.
My fingers are crossed, please.
Good. It'll be fun. All right. Well, we can wrap things up.
It's a good-looking car.
Yeah. It's good, right? You see in the pictures now? Yeah.
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 Real futuristic looking interior.
You know, with inflation going on and yada, 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 a bit of everything, we've got some price increases if you guys are going to be shopping around. Price increases on the Chevy Silverado, price increases on the Tesla. The Silverado, obviously, there's a whole bunch of different versions, the ZR2 and the LTZ and the LT. Anyway, price increases are going to be from about $800 on the low end to about $1,200 on the high end, depending on what model that you want. So just keep in mind, you're going to see a little bit of a price increase there.
And also keep in mind that that's a drop in the bucket compared to
What Rivian was going to do.
And then Rivian.
Rivian.
And speaking of which, a buddy of mine who's a producer, not a producer, but a writer in L.A., it has a Rivian on order, and I told him about the price increase, and he's gonna bail on his.
Well, they reverted it. They went back. They said we screwed up. Yeah, yeah. The next day, Rivian's like,
but there's still a delay out. Right?
There's still a delay, but they said that price increase, we lost your trust. We should have never done that. We didn't offer any concessions. We screwed up, and they said
good
so. We're them. Going back. Yeah,
good for them.
And they're saying, just thinks we're going to have to figure it out on our end and whatever. So,
well,
yeah.
It didn't save him because I guess the delay is what made it.
Yeah. So,
touching on that, that's awesome. That's good for them.
So, and what Rivian said was, is if you had an order or reservation and you bailed because of the price increase or whatever, you can go back and get back in line. You don't lose your place in line. They said, we screwed up.
Well, that's nice of them.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Well, I'm saying is, you know, how many times are you going to piss off the customer, even accidentally? If you go, hey, price increase, everybody, you know, cancels their order, then they revert back and they go, no price increase, but now everybody lost their order, then they'd be pissed again. So it just went, listen.
Jokes on you.
Yeah. And then everybody that was waiting, you know, down the list and didn't even read the email were like, I don't know what happened. It's just fine. But, anyway, so a little price increase on Tesla as well. I think a week or so ago, they added $1,000 to the long range miles. And now, again, there are some price increases. The Model 3 base price is going to go up $2,000. It's going to be $46,990. The Model 3 dual motor is going to go up $2,500. And the performance version is going to go up $3,000. So the Model Ys are going to see something similar, $2,000 for the long range. Performance is going to go up $3,000. And then the Model S, I guess, is going to get a little bit more of a jump. I think it's going up about $5,000.
I still think in this day and age, people or manufacturers ought to compensate the consumer some degree if they're asking for a price.
Well, I think what they're saying, the Silverado and the Tesla, for example, is they're not saying, hey, if you've ordered your car, we're charging you more money. They're just saying that whatever next year's model or anything that you start buying from this point forward is a slight increase. So that's
that's a general public thing.
That's right.
A general public announcement, not an order.
Right. And that's fairly common. Sometimes you'll be like, you know, hey, you know, like we were talking about the Jag, the F-Type, you know, it's new for 2023 and it's got a facelift and, you know, it's got the new V8 engines, you know, it's the 444 horse. And they may say, yeah, and the, you know, the price has changed $300 or $600 or whatever the case may be. That happens all the time. The issue, like what you're saying is if you have an order in place and then they come back and they go, we're going to charge you more money. You know, that's the part you can't really get to.
But this is good. I get it.
All right, let's say we wrap it up, and we'll see you guys next week. Appreciate it as always. Follow us at carcastshow.com is the website, and I'm at Motorator on social media, and he's Goldberg95 and Goldberg's Garage on Instagram. You got a little video editing to do, but once he gets around to it, you'll see some of the progress on the garage, a little walkthrough of the garage, you know, for those of you who are interested. I think it's fascinating. It's fun to see, but... all right, man.
That's the angle you have to hold your phone at. So, yes, I will do some. I need to go to editing school real quick.
All right, we'll see you guys next week. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Carcast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on carcastshow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
Would you love to save money on insurance? Well, of course, who doesn't love a good deal? Well, when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even homeowners, condo, and renters coverage. Save even more with a special discount when you bundle coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24-hour roadside assistance, and the switch to GEICO becomes a no-brainer. Switch today and see how you can save. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.